Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Yeah. Hey. 609, hi, I'm Steve, your radio friend.
Good morning.
Hi, Steve.
Andrea just got back from hanging out with Cyndi Lauper all night. How was the concert?
Well, I didn't hang with her. I had such bad seats. I bought these tickets
there
online.
Are no bad seats in the Chicago
Well,
theater.
I love it. I was so far back, though. I bought them online, and it said row K. I thought, oh, how bad can that be, right? But at the Chicago Theater, they start A, B, B, C, C, D, D.
Oh, okay.
I think there's even like a triple A, triple B, triple C.
Were you downstairs or upstairs?
Downstairs, but she was fantastic. She still sounds great. She rocked it.
How
her
old
new
is she
album,
now?
She's 62.
Wow.
Her new album has a little bit of a country sound, so she did some country songs, but really most of the oldies too. She was great.
Sell it out?
It was pretty much sold out, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Was it a one show thing?
Yeah, one night only.
Oh man.
She was awesome.
She talk about Kinky Boots?
She did talk about Kinky Boots, and which, of course, debuted here in Chicago. She
For
said,
those of people that don't know, that's not actually footwear.
No.
That's
was,
a play.
It was a play that debuted here, went to Broadway, was very successful, and she co-wrote it with Harvey Firestein.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, she was glad. She talked a lot. You know, she would talk, kind of explain each song, and then would
with
go
that
into,
New York accent of hers.
Yeah, from Queens. I know, shocking. But she was great.
Well, good. Good.
I'm glad I went.
Andrea called me last night at 6 to try to have me talk her off the ledge because, as we've said before, it's an idea you have at 6 or 7 in the morning is never a good idea at 7 o'clock at night.
No, and you said, you know what, it'll be a good show. She performed about an hour and a half. A lot of the bands lately are doing that, the opening acts. They'll have an opening act, and then the main act will play hour 20, hour and a half.
Who was the opener?
I don't know. I didn't get there for that. I thought I'll take a nap up until
but
I have to leave.
But we hope they were good.
Yeah, I hear they were good.
So tonight, Carol Burnett's in town for, I don't know, 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be old enough to, well, Dave, this would probably work for you. Any sentence it has, you have to
Good morning, Steve.
Hi, buddy. How are you?
Good.
I mean, hi, buddy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Yeah. So, Dave, you remember Saturday nights was Carol Burnett night. You had your Newhart, you had your Mary Tyler Moore. This is Saturday night TV.
Carol Burnett was Saturday nights?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember Newhart, Mary Tyler Moore, and all that.
Yeah, and it was all back to back.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that you could get America to stay home on a Saturday night to watch TV, everybody thought CBS was crazy, and it pulled it off. And the Carol Burnett Show was huge for many, 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 many years. And then SNL comes along in 1975. And Saturday Night Live were a bunch of kids who thought the Carol Burnett thing was stupid, and they wanted to do everything differently. Both shows had a hell of a run. Harvey Korman, Tim Conway.
Mm-hmm.
The only one who really never was a breakout star from that show was Lyle Waggoner.
Well, he was on Wonder Woman.
Yeah, and you know where he made his real money? It's a true story. You know what honey wagons are?
Mm-hmm. No.
You just shook your head just because you felt like you're too tired to have this discussion?
May I tell her?
Yes, go ahead.
May I tell her? Oh. So after they delivered the milk in the morning.
Oh, my God. You're kidding me, right?
The wagon, the horse-drawn wagon
no,
would
Dave,
come down my
no,
street.
Dave, no, that's different,
So
Dave.
Pa Ingalls
That's different, Dave.
About...
That's a totally different thing.
Dave would walk to school in his bare feet.
Upstairs, uphill, backwards.
Both ways, mm-hmm. Yeah.
A honey wagon is the name for the trailer that stars sit in on the set.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So Lyle Waggoner, and I don't know how, but Lyle Waggoner, and I say Waggoner because he's got about 14 G's in his name.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow got in the honey wagon business with some of his Carol Burnett money and became like the honey wagon guru.
The honey wagon honey?
The honey. Yeah, the honey wagon honey man. And made a bunch of money that way.
So I had no idea.
He became like this business guy that just had his wagons roll up on movie sets all over Hollywood.
Boy, and you thought his success stopped at Wonder Woman.
Now, he will not be at the Carol Burnett show tonight.
No, but will Vicki Lawrence be there? Because
I
love her.
No, I think, you remember the question and answer thing she'd do? She'd come out, she'd do like a couple of jokes, and then she'd take questions from the audience.
Oh, that's what it is?
Yeah, well, she, God bless her, man. She's 82 or something, right?
She's great.
84?
And how low is her ear after pulling on it so much?
One is 12 times the size of the other.
That was my favorite part when I was little. She'd pull on the ear.
But she's not doing sketches. She's not doing song. Well, she may sing. I don't know.
I bet she sings a little.
But she's going to come out, and she's going to take questions from the audience. So
it won't be a late night then again?
So, well, what's interesting is you were going to take your mom,
uh-huh.
And I was going to take my mom, And then I decided that I couldn't go. And then you decided you couldn't go. And now we're both taking our moms.
Now we're both taking our moms, yeah.
So, so that's tonight. So anyway, I'm glad you're awake from the Cyndi Lauper experience last night. Did you have a chance to ask her to come by the show this morning?
We were actually trying to get her on. And up until yesterday, she wasn't going to do any media. And her rep said, yeah, she can.
She's been on here a bunch. Why can't she?
First of all, yeah, he wrote me the nicest note. He said she loves WGN. She's a big friend of the city of Chicago. But she wasn't going to do any media. Because this was, I think, one of the first shows. She did Pennsylvania, Nashville, and then here. So she was going to wait until, you know, toward the end of the tour. I don't know why.
Drop her a note and say that
focus on the tour.
Wants to sell albums, she should probably do the show.
I know.
Senator Durbin later. We'll talk a little bit more about what that's about as we get closer to it. And Chuck Todd later as well. And what's going on with the airports and TSA? We'll get into that later as well. But if you have a flight at noon, you should already be in line.
Here he is, the Wizard of Wall Street himself.
The name is Lee Gates. The show is Money Monster. Without risk, there is no reward.
Man up!
Who's that guy on camera two?
You want to complain about it? Go ahead.
Who is it? Anybody know?
Was it a union thing?
Cut the feed.
Whoever's in there, turn the cameras on.
Turn the cameras off, Patty. Turn them on.
What am I going to do?
Turn them on.
Put it up.
Take it out. Put it on.
How do I know it won't blow up?
Because I have the detonator.
My thumb comes off this trigger, and we all explode.
6:20, it's a clip from Money Monster with George Clooney and Julia Roberts, directed by Jodie Foster. And Dave saw it, liked it.
I did.
Nick DiGilio joins us now. That thing make any money this weekend?
You know, it did okay. It did about $15 million. You know, which is not, you know, the huge numbers that you normally see in a May release. But, you know, it's really strange to think that a lot of the movies that George Clooney has made, he's only made 10 movies that have grossed more than $15 million on their opening weekend. Every other movie he's made has grossed under 15.
Well, pause there for a second. Because yeah. there's a term in show business, you know, your ability or your inability to open a movie, meaning the opening right. weekend has to be huge. How yeah. is this guy, aside from being good looking, devilishly good looking like myself, how is this guy such a megastar if he can't open a movie bigger than that? Because that's an amazing stat. I had no idea.
Yeah, I think it's because, you know, he's got his own production company. He and Grant Haslov, you know, produce movies and. He likes to do films that are not necessarily going to be blockbusters, the kind of movies that he produces, the kind of movies that he directs, and many of the movies that he chooses are not really huge commercial blockbusters. They do get Oscar nominations, they do get a lot of critical acclaim, and, you know, but he continues to have a lot of creative freedom. I think it's because he's such a well-respected guy. He can't open a movie, you know, like one of the biggest opening weekends a movie of his has had was Gravity, but that's because it was like an event movie. It was a science fiction special effects movie, and he also shared the screen with Sandra Bullock. And that
well,
was
and like Ocean's 11 was huge, right?
Yeah, all of the Ocean's movies are big. But, you know, it's stuff like The Monuments Men and things like Good Night and Good Luck. You know,
I really like that movie, by the way.
Good Night and Good Luck?
Yeah, yeah, I really like that movie.
Yeah, it's terrific. But he does a lot of these movies that they're message movies. They're the kind of movies that he really wants to do. And you know, Money Monster falls under that category as well. You know, he produced it, he co-produced it, and it's him and Julia Roberts. And it's directed by Jodie Foster. And it did 15 almost, which is fine. Nobody expected it to do much more than that.
Did everybody, I mean, obviously he's going to make a little producer money, but did everybody take less to work together? Is it one of those deals?
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, the salary of Julia Roberts and George Clooney and Jodie Foster, not to mention Jodie Foster, alone would put the budget through the roof in that regard. But a lot of people did, you know, they took a pay cut to work on this movie. It's a good film. I didn't think it was great. It's a good film. I think Jodie Foster is the highlight of the movie. I think she directed the heck out of this movie. It's a beautifully directed movie. The problem that I had with the movie is that as it goes on, it gets more and more absurd. You know, during the last 20 minutes of this movie, nothing that happens in that movie would happen on a planet Earth. But it's still, like, really well directed and tightly put together. And Jodie Foster can direct a really good thriller. This is actually the first like flat out thriller she's ever directed, and she does a really good job with it. And there are some good performances in it. I particularly want to mention Dave, you said you saw it?
I did.
And I want to mention one scene and one performance in general. And it's just, she's only in one scene. Her name is Emily Mead, and she plays the hijacker, the guy with the gun who comes in the studio. She plays his pregnant girlfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just got one scene in the movie, Dave. And it is, to me, it's the best scene in the entire movie. She comes in, she's got one scene and just kills it. Her name is Emily Mead. And I'm hoping she gets a lot of roles from that. Did you like that scene?
I did. And you know what was unusual about that scene is that's the point in a movie where normally the pregnant girlfriend would plead with this guy. And she wasn't pleading with him, right?
No, she wasn't. And it's also one of the moments in the movie where you, like, when that scene is over, you totally feel sympathy for the guy who has the gun now. Like, he's the bad guy. He's kind of crazy. You know, he's making George Clooney put on an explosive vest. But after that scene, you kind of go, oh, man, I feel terrible for that guy.
Why don't you guys just tell us the whole movie?
We didn't tell you anything just there.
I doesn't tell you anything. The bottom line is she's upset at the guy for doing what he's doing after he snaps, and he's in bigger trouble when he goes home than if he blowed up real good.
Yeah, pretty much.
And
it's a great.
And I haven't seen the movie, but just based on this, I'm not spoiling it for you. I can tell that's what you guys are talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it's good stuff. And overall, it's a good movie. It's a solid business. But the movie that is like cleaning up at the box office, obviously, is Captain America: Civil War. It will pass worldwide. It will pass the $1 billion mark this week worldwide. $1 billion.
And based on the fact that Robert Downey Jr. was smart enough as a businessman to get a piece of ownership of this whole franchise that he appears in, he will now have enough money to buy the United States and fire Donald Trump if he's elected.
Yeah, and I hope that's his first order of business.
Yeah.
Obviously, Robert Downey, the story that Robert Downey Jr., that comeback is of the ages. If you go pre-2008, nobody really banks on Robert Downey Jr. And then Kiss Kiss Bang Bang comes out, and Iron Man comes out, and Tropic Thunder. They all come out like right around the same time. And it's one of the biggest and most impressive comebacks in movie history.
Well, but his comeback was TV, you know, before he got the movie stuff, because when he was getting clean, he did Ally McBeal.
Right.
And when he was on Ally McBeal, then people go, okay, he does show up for work, and he does show up on time. We know he's unbelievably talented, but now he's not, you know, leaving to go sleep in strangers' beds in Malibu and all the other things he was involved in. I remember watching him on Ally McBeal thinking, well, isn't that cute? It's great that he's back, but, you know, maybe he'll get a sitcom. Well, now
look at it. If I'm not mistaken, I think he won an Emmy for that.
Well, he should have.
He was great. I'm almost positive he won an Emmy for Ally McBeal, and you're right. That did bring back the confidence for people to hire him. Favreau had to fight for him for Iron Man.
Right.
Had to fight for him. Yeah.
Yeah, well, all these guys get insured, and it's tough for insurance companies to write that insurance if they think, oh, I don't know, you're on crack.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Not good. The other movie I did want to mention, I talked to you about this on Thursday. I hadn't seen it yet. It's the Jason Bateman's second directorial film, and it's called The Family Fang. And in it, Nicole Kidman plays brother and sister who grew up in a family of performance artists led by Christopher Walken. As kids, they were forced to participate in these pranks/art experiments where they would prank the public, and then they would film it, and they become these sort of heroes in the alternative art world. And obviously, these adventures have damaged these kids. And as they're grown up, they've got some serious issues. And the parents disappear, and they think that it's a prank, and it's another one of their performance art pieces. And it's about them trying to find out what's happened with their disappeared parents. And it's a really interesting movie. I highly recommend that people check it out. It's on video on demand if you want to watch it. I watched it over the weekend. It's also playing at the Music Box if you get a chance to go down there and see it. But if you want to watch it on video on demand, Jason Bateman has turned out to be, I think, a terrific filmmaker. It's a completely different movie than his debut, Bad Words. It's much more complex, and it's much deeper and more significant. It's filled with great performances, everybody in it. And it's like, if you're a Walken fan, and I know that everybody is a Christopher Walken fan, this is one of those quintessential Christopher Walken performances. Like, this guy was born to play this role. And I never thought in a million years that I would think that Jason Bateman and Nicole Kidman would convincingly play brother and sister, but they're terrific in it. And so it's called The Family Thing. It's an unusual movie. It's a strange movie. The tone shifts between comedy, black comedy, and serious drama, and it's a movie that explores what really is art and what constitutes not being art. And it's the kind of thing, like, if Tom Green or Andy Kaufman had kids, and as little kids forced them to do the kind of stunts that they used to do, how would that damage those kids, and is that actually art?
Yeah, and who do they turn into? I'll let you go on this, but also I heard a great Christopher Walken story the other day. And they said there's an and it's not surprising it never got made, but there's an unmade script that's floated around Hollywood for years, which has Christopher Walken as the world's greatest parenting expert. And he's like the kid whisperer, and he's full on weird Christopher Walken, you know, but he gets around kids and kids love him. And he's the absolute expert on kids, and the juxtaposition of weird Christopher Walken with toddlers just made me laugh just hearing the idea.
Man, I wish they would make that.
Yeah, it's a funny idea. Funny idea.
It's a great idea. It's a great idea. You know who should make it? Robert Downey Jr.
There you go. That's it, buddy. All right, we'll hear you on the radio tonight, man.
You got it, buddy.
See it. That's Nick DiGiulio. And when I say we'll hear you, I mean, in my case, podcast form. At 6:30, big story coming up. And before 7, we got a glimpse of Tiger Woods the golfer for the first time again yesterday, and it wasn't good. Back with more coming up on 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show presents The Kid of the Week.
God bless the child.
Sponsored by Ray and Raymond Chevrolet. Remember, Kid of the Week leads to Kid of the Year. Do you know a kid doing something great between the ages of 5 and 18? Submit that entry to Kid of the Week. You can do it by going online at WGNradio.com/contests. And we'll pick a 2016 Kid of the Year at the end of the year with a $5,000 prize, courtesy of Ray Chevy in Fox Lake and Raymond Chevy in Antioch, where you can see all the inventory at RayandRaymondDeals.com. And that job, again, will fall on the shoulders of Mary Vandevelde and Dave Ennett, because Andre and I were too smart to get involved in nonsense. Today is a special Kid of the Week. 18-year-old Austin is about to join us, and Austin Antle, I believe the last name is Antle. Entire town of Hobart, Indiana, turned out to welcome Austin home about 6 months ago. He was riding his new dirt bike and slammed into a tree. And doctors and the best medical minds were very doubtful that he'd make it through the first night. And through perseverance and prayers and, frankly, flatly a miracle, Austin is not only alive, he is thriving and getting a little bit better every day. And we are proud to say that Austin is this week's Kid of the Week. Good morning, Austin.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for doing this, but mostly I couldn't be more thrilled for you and more proud of you for all you've done so far to recover.
Thank you.
What did it make you think when you came home Sunday and saw everybody in Hobart turn out to greet you?
I thought it was unbelievable.
And what's your day like now? Do you have certain stuff you have to do each day as you recover?
Therapy.
Right. So physical stuff and just trying to get everything working in the same way again?
Yeah. Right. What's
your goal, bud? What do you want to do? Because, you know, you got your whole life in front of you now.
I want to get into the operators.
Operating engineers.
And that's one. Yeah, that's Dad, by the way. Operating engineers do what, Dad?
We build stuff. We are crane operators, bulldozer operators, backhoe operators, heavy equipment.
And Dad's standing by to do the right thing. It's all dads do, because it's not easy for Austin to get on the phone with me and talk about this either. Not because he's necessarily emotional about it, but he's just getting out of the hospital and getting all the wiring right again and getting everything going in the right direction, as I said. Dad, how are you doing?
We're doing pretty good. We're on day 199 since the day of the injury, and he's improving big time. Ever since he got home, he can talk better. He's sleeping very good.
Well, sleep is a big part of it, right? Big deal.
Oh, yes, it's a big deal. He needs to get his rest, and if you were to see him smile more and more every day. That's what makes his mom and I extremely happy.
I'll bet. And Austin, we have some stuff we're going to send you just as kid of the week. I don't think there's any diet restrictions, right? You probably wouldn't mind a pizza, would you?
No.
Okay.
He loves pizza.
And for your whole family, I mean, it had to be so incredibly moving to see everybody in Hobart turn out to welcome Austin home.
Yeah, it was overwhelming. There were, you know, a couple hundred people out there saying prayers, screaming and crying, and motorcycles, and the mayor of Hobart, the whole city, the first responders. It was unreal. It was beautiful to see, and we thank all of them for what they've done for all of us.
Austin, you must be a heck of a kid because there's an awful lot of people that love you long before this accident and forevermore. So I hope that makes you feel good.
Oh, yeah.
All right, bud. Well, you keep up the hard work and, you know, literally one foot in front of the other. That's how you're going to get this done. And with your family support and the town of Hobart support, very proud to have you as kid of the week. And, Dad, you're a good man.
Thank you. His mom's a good mom, too. She's sitting here by listening.
Oh, I didn't know she was with you. Oh, well, enough with you knuckleheads. Let me say hi to Mom for a second.
Well, my God, here she is.
Hello.
Hi, Mom. What's your first name, Mom?
Larissa.
I can't imagine what your family's gone through, but to have Austin get up and say hi on the radio and stuff after what you've been through and what he's been through, that's just a continuation of the miracle, I guess.
Absolutely. I'm so glad that he's home. This is all I wanted.
Yeah, one step at a time, right? The goals in life change, but now the goals are endless. You guys can just keep taking more steps. Tomorrow's another day, and then next week, who knows what he'll do?
Absolutely. Every day he does something different to amaze us.
Well, and thanks to everybody in Hobart. You know, in a world of bad news, you hear stories like this, and we can't begin to understand what your family has gone through and what you'll go through, and Austin, what you've gone through. But this makes everybody feel better about all of us, I think, too. So thank you for sharing the story.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, Austin, have a good day, buddy. You're always welcome here, okay?
Okay. Thank you.
All right, all the best. That's Ken, and what was Mom's name?
Larissa.
I'm sorry, mm-hmm. The phone was a little fuzzy.
What a great family.
Yeah. So and Sunday.
Such a great support system, too, for him.
There's a Facebook page called Awesome Prayers for Austin. And on Sunday, and it's got, I don't know, 3,000 members or something at this point. But on Sunday when he came home, he just got out of RIC on Sunday, mm-hmm. Rehabilitation Institute of Chicago. And it started out with a few dozen family and friends, and then suddenly it's hundreds of people on motorcycles and cars and police and firefighters, all escorting Austin from I-65 to Festival Park downtown to show him how much everybody cares about him.
It's an unbelievable story. It's a miracle he's alive.
It's unbelievable.
And then talking to you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really awesome.
Yeah.
He is awesome.
I hope he didn't get up early for me. Go back to bed, Austin. Get some rest.
Give him two pizzas.
Yeah, really.
So we got more than pizza, too. It's not just our friends at Lou Malnati's. We'll send him everything, and as always, we'll send him when he's ready to drive again at some point, one of Rokon's cars.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect.
So it's the least Ro can do. Congratulations, Austin. You're a phenomenal kid of the week, and you got a brilliant family, and that's what love can do, kids. 6:54, if you're listening to Rokon show yesterday... Rokon and Anna every day from 3 to 7. They were talking about a guy we used to know pretty well, Kevin Powell, produced this show.
Vaguely remember him.
Yeah, Kevin apparently has a date coming up from a new dating set. Well, it's not new. It's new to me. It's called Bumble.
Oh, I haven't heard of it. I have to ask Bella.
You know about Bumble?
I've never heard of Bumble.
My understanding of Bumble is it's halfway between like a Match and Tinder.
Okay,
like if
so
Tinder's
swipe.
A hookup site and Match is the relationship site, Bumble's the maybe. We'll see what happens.
Literally.
Anything's possible. Am I describing Bumble right, Samber?
You are. And the kids all say that Bumble is where all the attractive people are. They're more attractive.
I thought Tinder was for that.
No, Tinder's just for
Tinder's anybody
up.
That wants to hook up?
Yeah, the Bumble is where like the more attractive younger people are, so it's perfect for Kevin.
It's the more specialized Tinder.
I've actually helped him Bumble. Occasionally he would hand me his phone and I would swipe for him. I thought they were cute.
Is this the swipe right, swipe left situation?
It is. You know, it might be up or down on Bumble, but yes, it's that.
Tinder's the swiping.
He hopes so.
Yeah, so it's a...
Yeah, that's how they all...
It's a combo of Tinder and what was the other one, Match?
Well, I'm just saying it's halfway between... The way it's described to me is halfway between Match and
Yeah,
and
Match
Tinder.
Is for like 45 and up, so...
And okay, well, don't be so dismissive.
Bumble.
Okay.
Bumble. Where do they get their names?
Buzz, buzz. Tinder. Girls are buzzing around.
I don't know.
Oh, got it.
So let's just go around the room quickly and collect some dating tips for Kevin here. Dave, do you have any dating advice you want to give Kevin? He's out in the dating world.
I would say just be yourself, be a gentleman, which Kevin is.
Have you met Kevin?
I was going to say, really? Is it a gentleman to you because you're his boss?
No, I think that's very, very unkind.
So what would you say he should say to the girl or do for the girl? Pay for dinner.
Pay for dinner.
Old school, of course.
Sure, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sure.
Jake, you got a dating tip for Kevin?
In terms of the whole talking thing, less is more.
Talk less about yourself.
Yeah.
I'd agree with that. Talk less, listen more.
Or just in general with Kevin. I just wouldn't talk very much.
Hold on. I'm giving the audience time to laugh as they think about me talking less and listening more. Talk less, listen more. John DeCosh, you have a dating tip for Kevin?
Don't order all the appetizers.
But don't order the salad either.
Kevin's
I know
lost
he's on
30
a diet.
Pounds.
Yeah, he's still eating healthy.
I think he is eating salads.
I think he is too.
Yeah.
Where do you think they're going on their first date?
A drive-thru. Yeah, I'm not entirely sure. All right, let's go to the females. Andre Darles, dating tip for Kevin?
Dating tip for Kevin. I would say... You know, be a gentleman. I still like
be a gentleman's been taken.
Oh crap!
Come up with your own stuff.
Like, what would you like?
Shut up.
Okay, I know this is going to be hard to imagine, but if Kevin was taking you out on a date, this is hard. If Kevin was taking you out on a date, what would you want?
He should be so lucky.
What would you want him to do?
What would I want him to do?
Keep it clean, Andrea.
I know, right? Let me think about this. Come back to me. Do Mary first.
Mary.
Oh, thanks a lot. I don't know. Maybe he should just do like a drink or lunch so he can bolt if he has to.
Well, why are you worried about him? Maybe the girl wants to bolt.
Well, I think it's the same. It goes both ways, don't you think? I'm concerned for Kevin.
That's a negative outlook.
I know Kevin. Well, that's what I do. But
Sandberg, if Paulo was taking you out, what would you want him to do for you?
I would want him to be sweet and funny because he's sweet and funny. Yeah. So
be fun to see you've made it harder for yourself. Funny's been taken now as well.
Yeah, I know. I got nothing left.
How about sports?
You know what I'm going to say? Problem. Pay. Oh, that's been taken.
Pay's
too.
Been taken as well.
I got nothing for him.
So you just want to say everything? All
Maybe
the advice
we've
given.
Maybe I should talk to the girl and give her some advice about Kevin.
May I give Andrea a suggestion?
No, I don't want your suggestion.
Okay. Fine. You can give one to me.
Well, don't talk about the business. Don't talk shop. Well,
what if she wants to know?
What if they ask him?
Which wants to know what?
Well, that's Steve Cochran really.
Okay,
like?
but don't turn it into all of the inside stuff about the Steve Cochran show.
Don't you think the majority of it should be about me?
I think a lot yes. of it will be.
Yeah. Oh, I got
his start, and now he's doing sport. It should be. Don't mention Roe.
Yeah. Yeah,
well, I got a good one though. Don't talk about sports all the time.
Because what if she likes sports?
Well, he doesn't know that though.
Find out first.
Yeah, but don't sit there and just talk sports. You got to have a plan B.
How about
culture?
How about talk less and listen more?
Yeah, that one's taken too.
Okay.
Yeah,
I like the plan B, but I would set it up where he would bring two dates. So if the first one's not working,
same table. All right, now, with great risk to my life here. Mm-hmm. Grzanich, you got a dating tip for Kevin?
Do a background check
right.
on the person first.
I have
some police family members that can help if you
need
it.
That's good. I knew there would be some sort of trouble if I threw this your way. It's a minute before 7. We'll come back with the news next on 720 WGN. And for the continuing saga of Kevin's next date, Ro Khan this afternoon at 3 on 720 WGN.
Hey, girl.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
Bring everybody you know to go vote in the primary, and then let's do everything we can to win Kentucky in November.
Let Kentucky join the other 19 states so far and demand a political revolution in our country. Oregon also votes on Tuesday, and we hope to make it 21 in Oregon.
You vote for me on Tuesday, I will stand up and fight for you through this campaign and every day in the White House.
She's got to stop yelling. And I'm not kidding. It's completely unfair. It's a completely unfair scorecard because women have to fight that battle. But she does sound shrill. She does sound like your mom yelling at you. And she does create a problem for herself when she does that. I don't know how somebody that doesn't... Chuck Todd could fix it. Chuck, please tell Hillary Clinton to stop yelling.
Steve, you are walking down into a buzzsaw, brother.
I know, but I'm trying to explain that. I'm telling. I mean, I really
I know where you're going here. I just think it's honestly, it's just because there haven't been a lot of women to run for president, and you know, the running for president is filled with a lot of stump speaking, and we're just not. I think as an audience, we're just not used to it, and I just think over time, as more women run for national office, as you see more women on the stump, I think it won't come across 10 years from now. The same type of thing won't come across as shrill.
I would agree with
that. I think it. I do think that some of this is just simply, oh, it's just we're so used to a male ear, okay, audio-wise. And I think that's why. And you're right. So you were right to point out, I think she's being graded unfairly just simply because of gender,
right,
on that front. But I think it's a, look, she just isn't. She just isn't comfortable as a big room campaigner, right? That's never been her forte.
Right.
That's not something she's great at, and it's something she needs to get a little bit better at. I'll grant you that.
Well, based on now, not 10 years from now, based on now,
I know. Right,
that's what I'm talking about, and it's not meant to be sexist at all, and I don't think it is sexist.
No, it's not. By the way, you're not wrong that it could be. You know that it's something that can have that might have an impact on some voters.
So what's a bigger problem for her, honesty or being a bad candidate?
I think her biggest problem is that is the big idea. Why are you running for president, Hillary Clinton? Why you? Why is this the moment? What is it? What is the big idea that only you are uniquely qualified to tackle, right? Trump, for better or for worse, we know what that big idea is, man. This guy is going to be the great disruptor of Washington.
Yeah, true.
System, okay? We know exactly, and he's Mr. Change. We don't even know what the change is. It actually changes every day what the change is with him. Okay?
Right.
But, right, you know, but it is, he is number one, he has got the change message, and that's a powerful thing to have. And number two, you know, you sort of have the five-word idea of what he's going to do, not the whole sloganeering of him, but that he is going to be this. That's her challenge. Like right now, she's basically saying, hey, we've been making some progress. I'm the person that's best equipped to keep that progress going. Well, that ain't very exciting, right? That's her challenge.
Yeah, and the dull nature of it continues to allow a 72-year-old Vermont ex-hippie.
74-year-old.
I'm sorry, 74-year-old Vermont ex-hippie to be relevant and continue to be the disruptor on her side. By the way, Trump yesterday was tweeting, as only the big Don can, encouraging Bernie Trump to run as a third-party candidate. It's not going to happen, but does Trump not understand that if he ran as a third-party candidate, he'd take votes from Trump?
Well, I guess that's what he doesn't think that. I think he thinks the other way. Look, I think he would take some votes from Trump, and I think, but he would take more votes from Clinton's left than anywhere else. So he would hurt her more than him. But, you know, we know what Trump's up to. The fact of the matter is the country's screaming for a third alternative. The problem is there just really isn't. The logistics make it almost impossible to come up with a plausible third alternative, period. But that said, the Green Party candidate and the Libertarian Party candidate, they're going to matter. Their votes are going to matter potentially in some states. You know, if one of them gets 5-6%, or one of them gets even 2-3% in some of these states, it can swing. It could swing a state.
But at this point, do we know who they're going to hurt?
The Greens would hurt the left. The Libertarian hurts the right. I think pure and simple. I think the Libertarian Party is going to end up becoming the de facto none of the above choice. And so I believe that always hurts the challenging party. Okay, meaning the whoever's the challenger in this. If Hillary Clinton's basically the incumbent. And you know, the third is just like the way George H.W. would. Perot hurt Bush more,
right,
I think, than Clinton, simply because he was, but in many ways, I always thought he hurt Clinton as much because he was also splitting the change vote. So I think that that's where a third party candidate would probably, in a libertarian front, hurt Trump more than anybody else.
Are you hearing anything more about the email situation with Hillary and the FBI?
Other than the interview hasn't happened yet. And I can tell you there are people in Clinton's campaign, I don't know if Clinton feels this way, but there are people in the campaign that are like, just please interview her already.
Right.
They just want to get this, whatever the outcome is, they just don't want it hanging over their head. They just want to get this done.
You know, it's impossible to go a day without just being fascinated. You know, Letterman used to have a great phrase for this. He'd say, yeah, he ain't hooked up right. And every day there's a he ain't hooked right hooked up right moment with Trump, or two or three. Of all the things to not be straight about and to not lie about, the fact that you do a bad impression of yourself is the easiest out he ever could have had. I mean, he just goes back to the 90s and just says, look, yeah, I was trying to drum up some publicity for me. I was trying to get some buzz going for me. Yeah, I admit it might have been a good little goofy, but what's the big deal? And it's over.
That's Trump in a nutshell, man. I know. I mean, he's just, first of all, it is a window into, he is his own publicist. He's his own PR person. He's his own political advisor. He doesn't, look, I've had off the record phone conversations with him as many times as I've had on camera. You know, he does his own, like, hey, I don't understand why you said this, right? This is just, he manages his own image, and he doesn't trust anybody else to do it.
The New York Times story on how he treats women was not a hit piece. Factual or slightly factual remembrances of interactions with Donald Trump are what they are. But the fact is, there's too many women who have said the same thing about how he has handled situations. And by the way, you can be a complete thug as a male and still hire women and employ women and treat women with respect at work on some level and compartmentalize your life and still go out and be a creep with other women. I don't understand how that's difficult for people to wrap their heads around, because we all know people like that.
Well, and the other thing was, is that, look, Trump has done what many a politician has done for years, which is, When you've got a tough piece against you, and they've got 90% of the facts, find the 10% that they don't have right and just hammer that, right? And that's essentially what he did here. Is he found somebody that says, "Hey, wait a minute," and so they hammer, and it's cast a shadow over the entire piece. But it's funny about that piece. When I saw the piece, I was like, "Well, I don't need to read it. I know this."
Right. Now, exactly right.
Like, this is not new information to people. This was more detail. Okay. I'm not saying, you know, the specifics were new, but was the image that it paints new? No. And that's in a weird way, this is to me what the Clinton campaign is going to struggle with the most, which is a lot of this is baked in with Trump. People know this going in. And so does this, you know, I don't know if it hurts him any more than he's already been hurt with women. Does that make sense?
Yeah, meaning absolutely.
His stuff's already there. So, you know, I think his greatest vulnerability to me is if somebody undermines his perceived strength. And the perceived strength is that he's a successful businessman. And if that gets traction, you know, his weak spot is anytime his wealth gets questioned or his business acumen gets questioned. And frankly, there's a lot of questionable questions about whether he's been a successful businessman or not. You know,
well, isn't that why the tax returns are such a big deal to him?
Well, I think that's exactly right. Is that maybe it? You know, maybe the emperor has no clothes here, or in this case, has no billions.
Chuck, any inside word on who could be either vice presidential nominee?
I think on the Democratic side, it's more obvious who the front runners are, and I think it's the two senators, one from Ohio, Sherrod Brown, one from Virginia, Tim Kaine. Tim Kaine, if you were to put a gun to my head and say, you know, you had to put all your chips on one person, I'd put it on Kaine. He checks more boxes. Swing state, been a governor and a senator, been a party leader, was an Obama guy in 08, not a Clinton person, so it's a party uniting thing. Doesn't make a lot of mistakes, isn't somebody that is gaffe prone, speaks fluent Spanish. Oh, by the way, his father-in-law is a former Republican governor of Virginia. You know, there's a lot of There's a lot of upside to him. Yeah, he's not the most charismatic guy, but he is a do-no-harm person and certainly a governing partner. And I'm told that's what she's thinking of, like, in that model. She wants somebody that she isn't going to be tired of seeing every day. Sherrod Brown is somebody, if you truly are worried about the Sanders crowd, he's a little more progressive. He speaks to the working class vote probably as well as anybody in the Democratic Senate these days, the Democratic side of the aisle. So he's got that sort of gut instinct on that populist. And, oh, by the way, he's from Ohio. So after that, I think everybody else, I think I'm told Cory Booker is somebody that she personally is fond of and has gotten to know and really likes him. So I think he's going to get vetted. And 6 months ago, I would have said he wouldn't. Some people have floated Deval Patrick, the former Massachusetts governor. I don't think. I think the fact that he works for the same company that Mitt Romney worked at, Bain, is probably a non-starter in this political environment. And I don't want to say I'll eat my phone if Elizabeth Warren is picked, but if I thought it wouldn't do harm to me and to my bodily function, I would pledge to you I would eat my phone. If Elizabeth Warren became the running mate, I think that is the most far-fetched of all the ideas that get floated. I know why it gets floated, but it tells when people float it, they know nothing about the interpersonal relationships of Elizabeth Warren entire Democratic Party in Washington.
Right. No, I totally get it. Well, listen, save the Trump side for next time, because it's not like the story's going to get old. He's the best, man. He's Chuck Todd, host of Meet the Press. And he will do kids' birthday parties and bar mitzvahs and talk politics to the youngsters.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve.
All right. Thanks, bud. Appreciate it. 7:23. Senator Durbin on the TSA mess coming up. That'll be an extended big story in just a few minutes. Steve Cochran Show live in the Allstate Showcase studio continues. Senator Dick Durbin joins us. Very tight schedule this morning, Senator. I appreciate your time. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, but I have family members who have been in line at O'Hare since last month. And
it's awful.
It's ridiculous.
And the system has crashed in both O'Hare and Midway and other airports around the country. We aren't the only ones going through this. Are facing this. I talked to Ginger Evans yesterday, the Commissioner of Aviation. She's an experienced person. She's been at Denver and a number of major airports. She said it's a near riot situation, if you can imagine, in our airport terminals. There are so many people waiting an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours. They've declared basically a summer emergency, like the snow emergency. So they're setting up cots in the airport and at this point, and they've called in the police to break up fights. And if they go to the back of the line of somebody who says, I got a plane in a half an hour, they start to bring them in front of the line. People start complaining that they've been waiting so darn long, they don't want anybody in front of them.
Somebody's going to get hurt. That's the bottom line. Yeah, somebody's going to get hurt.
Well, it is, and they called the police on them. So I said, well, what has happened here? You know, I probably know more about O'Hare and Midway than most of the people who call into your show.
Sure.
I spend a lot of time in airports. I didn't see this coming. I mean, I noticed lines were getting a little longer, but now the system has crashed. And you ask yourself, what is it? Well, the number of passengers are up, and they're going to go up more, incidentally, in summer travel season. The number of screeners has been coming down. For every 200 new screeners we come up with each week, 100 quit. So, you know, there's attrition. The job is not a...
Okay, now you've hit on something that nobody's talking about, so let me stop you there. We thought this was a hiring problem. You are telling me now that people are leaving. It's a problem of people staying in the job.
Yes, that's part of it. There was a hiring problem not that many years ago, 2014, when we lost 4,600 screeners during the course of a year and had a gain of 500. So we fell behind there. And now we've seen about a 5% decline in the number of screeners in the last few years and a 14% increase in passengers. But that doesn't explain what we're seeing out there completely. There are a couple other things that are part of this deal. TSA PreCheck, and I hope your listeners take that seriously and sign up for it. I have. Those are shorter lines. There's less, you don't have to take your shoes off. Things that slow things down just a little bit, but cumulatively cause real delays. We need more people to sign up for TSA PreCheck. Ginger Evans says, we need more bomb-sniffing dogs. If these dogs will walk the line and don't detect anything, we can take large groups of passengers and move them through TSA PreCheck
right.
once the dogs are sniffed. Why does Indianapolis have the same number of dogs as Chicago?
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
It's crazy. You know, it is not in the same league in terms of volume of passengers. I also think, and some people dispute this, but I also think this notion of baggage fees that force people to say, I'm not paying $25 or whatever the charge.
Right, I'm going to bring them, and you're going to have to check them all. You're going to have to look at every one of them.
I'm going to run them right on through the line. Well, now everybody's got a rollerboard, you know, going through the line. I prefer doing that because I want to get off the plane and take off. But, you know, perhaps we've got to start saying to folks, you know, no baggage fees through the summer for you airlines so you can get your airplanes filled with passengers again instead of empty seats. And for folks, you want to avoid, you know, long waits in line. Cooperate a little bit here. Check a bag. It's a little bit of inconvenience when you arrive, but it at least might help the system at the TSA screening position.
But again, for the effort of understanding how we got here so fast, TSA employees down, passenger levels up, airlines running at record profits. Is this something the airlines should be paying more for? Because that simple solution you just recommended, I don't know how easy it is to get into play quickly enough to make a difference, but an airline suspension of baggage fees for the next 40 days while we train new people to get in would seem like a step in the right direction. Is that easy or impossible to do?
Well, I'm talking to the TSA people today. I talked to Ginger Evans yesterday, and I want to talk to the airlines. The question, obviously, is whether they have the capacity to deal with checked baggage if it increases. You see, the system, you know, has this narrowing as it gets to the airplane itself, and whether a person's dragging the bag on as a passenger or checking the bag, all I want to make sure is they've got the capacity to absorb more baggage. She told me something yesterday I didn't know, and that is if an international flight leaves late, arrives late, there's a penalty per passenger the airline has to pay. And the international carriers are now complaining to her that TSA slowdowns are costing them dramatically in landing fees in Europe. So you know, we have to kind of pull together to get through this mess. Certainly the people who are out at the airport, you know, the frustration they feel, I've felt myself, not to this extent, but many times.
It's unbelievable. Well, yeah, the Midway line last week was 4 or 5 hours. That video went viral. TSA says they'll hire 800 new officers this month, but the TSA union says they need 6,000. So I guess how soon can we see relief, Senator, with these 800 new officers being installed?
Well, first, let me go back to the beginning here. What are we doing? We are screening for security. We have found too many times that the current system does not detect bombs or firearms. Now, remember, that is the key to this, why we're doing this, the safety of ourselves and our families as we travel. And the question is, what more can we do? Well, I take a look at Midway, and I take a look at O'Hare, and I see screening stations that are empty.
Yep.
They don't have personnel at them.
Yeah.
And you think, well, they built the system. Why in the heck don't we have the personnel to make the system work? So, yes, more screeners, more screening stations. But remember that security and safety is their goal. And, you know, we want to make sure that they don't compromise that by running people through without adequate review of what they are carrying.
Well, money moves everything. We all know this. Money moves everything. And the money for the airlines and the money the government has to spend on TSA have to merge in a particular way to make this work. Because if it doesn't, we are going to have somebody get hurt at these places. On top of the fact that you've got families that are now standing in line longer than the entire flight that they would be on.
Right.
O'Hare tweeted out this morning at 4 a.m. there was a 3-hour TSA wait.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you something. They also, at some airports, have decided to bring in private agencies to do this under the supervision of TSA. That could be an angle that we need to look at. The airlines ought to be joining with O'Hare to discuss that possibility. But, you know, we're at the earliest stages of the summer travel season. You know, we can expect even bigger crowds in the months to come.
And the planes won't wait, right, Senator? I mean, because if you start that, then it just leads to more and more and more delays. Right.
The domino effect.
Yeah. So if you
it would be cool if the pilot went, hey, Senator Durbin, could you hustle it up a little bit? We got to go.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to make light of it because a lot of people are angry and a lot of people are suffering, you know, delays of not just a matter of hours, but sometimes overnight. I mean, this is not a good situation at all. So I'm all over it here to try to get things moving at this end of it and to try to keep up with what's going on. I'll be back in town on Friday to meet with the local airport officials and try to figure out some way to deal with this quickly.
Yeah, and will you update us when you get a break in that?
I sure will.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it, sir.
Good talking to you.
Sponsored by Grandview Capital, you're listening to The Big Story. Andrea,
where are
we going from here?
And you're not exaggerating, too. We just did receive this tweet from Midway Airport. Today, if you're flying out of Midway, they recommend arriving 3 hours before your flight.
It's ridiculous. It's offensive.
Yeah, it's a tweet from Midway. So FYI, if you are flying out today or picking somebody up. That's The Big Story. We thank
Senator
Durbin.
Faster to walk.
Yeah, for being a part of our Big Story. That's probably true. Or drive, right, Mayor?
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
WGN Radio is the sound of Chicago.
720 WGN.
Now, busy morning, and more on this TSA mess coming up later. If you're in line now at the airport, you should have the TuneIn app. You should be listening to the show because nothing will kill time like me.
Mm-hmm. Also, I said Midway 3 hours. O'Hare tweeting as well 3 hours. Mm-hmm. So you're not off the hook.
Travis Aiken's about to join us, executive director of the Illinois Lawsuit Abuse Watch. One of the things Governor Rauner has asked for, and it's more than negotiable, but it's a very important thing, is a hard look at abusive lawsuits. Lawsuits that tie up the courts, lawsuits that have unfair penalties that are paid out, things of that nature. Travis Aiken joins us to talk about his end of this. First off, the ADA piece of this. Explain to people what an ADA lawsuit is.
Yeah, so the Americans with Disabilities Act lawsuits, what we've seen, a lot of this particularly, is in the state of California. They had 40% of the nation's ADA lawsuits. And what happens is these law firms will partner up with people who have disabilities and kind of turn them loose in a neighborhood and say, go to all the businesses in this block and come back to us with information on which ones are compliant and which ones aren't. And it can be something as simple as a sign is misplaced, or maybe the step is too high to enter into the building. Just different things that may not be 100% in compliance with the Americans with Disabilities Act.
Right, restroom accessibility, and by the way the law was written, all of these things are relevant, but the law was not written with the intent that people would go out and look for people who are breaking the law in the course of running their business. That's the ass leading the horse, frankly.
That's an excellent way of putting it. And so they file these lawsuits rather than go to the business owner and say, hey, you're not in compliance. You really ought to get this checked out. They file a lawsuit. They try to settle for a dollar amount. And then at the end of that process, the business owner still has to go and spend more money to become compliant. And business owners acknowledge, hey, if we're not in compliance, we're gonna fix it. We'll fix it. But what we don't like is these annoying lawsuits. And there was a story not too long ago in the Chicago Tribune where this woman saw her neighbor sued. She owns a flower shop, and in that neighborhood there were 14 lawsuits, ADA lawsuits filed. And so what has happened in California, and my fear is that it's going to start happening here. We're going to see this wave of ADA lawsuits and these annoying kind of nuisance lawsuits that are going to really hurt small business owners. And they're not targeting large business. They're targeting mom-and-pop shops, these businesses that don't have the resources to necessarily defend themselves in these lawsuits. And, ultimately, it is going to have an impact on the local economy. People will end up either going out of business, or if they're thinking about, getting a new location, they're going to have to put those plans on hold because of these frivolous lawsuits.
So can't these the court system itself self-govern in this case to decide which are frivolous and which aren't? Or if it's brought with a true violation, it has to be heard?
The courts have some discretion, yes. But what they did in California just recently, Governor Jerry Brown signed some legislation into law, giving businesses basically, when they find out about a problem, giving them 120 days to become compliant. And then at that point, all bets are off, and they can be sued. And but giving them a little bit of a grace period to get the problems fixed before they have to face litigation. And I think we ought to look at something similar to what they did in California. That was bipartisan legislation. Democrats, Republicans came together to support that, and the Democrat governor signed it into law. I think we should learn from what happened in California, where these businesses were suffering under these nuisance lawsuits, and they came to they had a lobby day a few months ago in California. Hundreds of business owners came to the state capitol and begged the legislature to do something about this.
Well, then,
we don't want to get to that point here in Illinois.
Then here's what I'd love to do. I'm going to put you on hold here, and I'd love for you to stay in touch with us and let us know what success you're having in Springfield and moving the ball on this, because I do think it's important. And again, the Americans with Disabilities Act, of course we all support it. And it's absolutely something that we support. But the idea that you're going to take someone who is disabled and send them into a restaurant and go, well, the bathroom stall needs to be an inch and a half wider, so I'm going to file a suit against this this 12-table diner, or whatever the case may be. Yeah. I mean, it's ridiculous.
That's abusing the system, too.
Right, so it needs to stop. So what Travis is saying here is, let's stop it before it becomes a much bigger problem. And it's hard to argue with that.
UGN Chicago.
Hey. I went to get my decolletage treatment, my lessons, to give it back to you, to give it back to its rightful owner. Guess who swiped it from me?
Sandberg. Sandberg, a decolletage thief.
I'm not going to say, but her name rhymes with...
Mary Sandberg.
Larry Landberg.
Wendy McClendon Covey is one of the funniest people in show business, scheduled to appear on this show in just a second. You remember the movie Bridesmaids?
Oh, she was hilarious.
She hated her children.
Yeah.
I remember Reno 911.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very funny in that. And of course, she is the mom and my friend Jeff Garland's wife on the Goldbergs.
It's a funny show.
And so you say.
Yeah.
No, she is hilarious. She is hilarious. And she'll be on with us in just a few minutes. She's talking to, I don't know, Hot 94 in Dubuque or something right now. So we're waiting for her to finish with those guys. But we'll get to that coming up in just a second. The TSA mess as it continues. Again, I just want to recap what Senator Durbin told us a few moments ago. And that is, you got people leaving the system. Now, the TSA employees, I would like to see the TSA employees with a greater sense of urgency than they have when you go through the lines. Because if you don't like the job, it's not my fault that you have the job.
No, I agree.
You can leave the job, but while you do the job, you need to do it with a sense of urgency.
Mm-hmm.
Move a little faster. Have some stronger people in charge of the line, and let's process people as quickly as possible. Obviously, passengers can do more, and we'll get into what you can do as a passenger a little bit later. But the other thing that Senator Durbin brought up is, and this is he certainly made this sound like this is a push in D.C., that he is going to ask for the airlines, and I suppose they've got to do it voluntarily first, because otherwise you've got to make it legally mandated, and I don't know how you do that, to tell the airlines, waive the baggage fees.
Absolutely.
Waive the baggage fees for the next, I think they said 40 days is what it would take to train the 800 that they just hired.
Absolutely. Best case, waive it through the summer, but if you could only do it for a short period of time, 40 days, fine. You don't have to lug your entire, you know, closet onto carry-on.
Right.
And through TSA. The security.
And if the airlines don't want to cooperate, obviously the other way this goes is whatever fees the government charges the airlines, they are going to go up. And the other thing you mentioned, which again, we didn't know about or we didn't think about, is the airlines pay a penalty for flights that they don't connect to, you know, the overseas flights he was talking about. Like, for instance, you're going to, you're flying to Paris, mm-hmm. and you're connecting in Paris to go to Rome or whatever. You miss your flight and the passengers miss their flight. There's a penalty the originating airline has to make for not filling the plane that they need to be filled to go to the next place.
Then they should start waiving those too, temporarily.
Right. What I'm saying is there's an incentive for the airlines to get their act together and to make sure TSA can do their job as quickly as possible.
Yeah. No, I agree.
So.
It's terrible. There's no excuse. You said it best yesterday. There's no excuse. You have to get to the airport 2 or 3 hours early for a 2-hour flight.
I won't do it. I will not do it.
Come on.
No. And anything within, and I'm not exaggerating, anything within a 10 to 12 hour drive, I would rather get in the car and drive for 10 to 12 hours than stand in line 3 hours waiting for an airplane.
For a 2 hour flight, yeah.
I could use a laugh. Wendy McClendon Covey standing by to join us right now. She's talking to radio chumps all over the country. Thank God you got through to us. We could actually help you.
I know. How are you?
Well, we're great, and I'm a big fan. Nice to meet you.
It's nice to meet you.
And your TV husband, Jeff Garland, is a buddy from way back, so please tell him Steve Cochran said hello, and where's the money?
I'm going to tweet him right now and ask him.
I'm sorry the Goldbergs hasn't worked out. Good God, you got a hit on your hands.
I know, right?
So
who knew? We're only one of three comedies that survived the 2013 launch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Across all networks.
Oh, that's unbelievable. I did not know that.
So that's, we're feeling pretty good about that. And, yeah, we start season four in August.
And so, it's
we're all just counting our blessings.
And of your TV children, which one do you like the best, and which one really drives you nuts?
I cannot answer that question.
Oh, come on, it's your TV family.
I cannot answer that question. All my TV children are perfect.
Yeah, sure they are.
They are all perfect human beings who had better get Teen Choice nominations. P.S.
They smell. They're
on a very extensive campaign.
They smell. They're sticky. Oh wait.
Yeah, that's something entirely different.
Different mom.
No,
that's
right.
Different mom.
Yeah.
Andrea, Wendy McClendon Covey is the busiest woman in show business. She's doing your movies. She came out of the Groundlings, which is one of the best things you could ever get for training for comedy. And it's good because she has limited skills in other areas, as you've said in other interviews.
Yeah.
So this very
limited skills. So I'm really lucky that anyone listens to me at all.
I'm going to tell you something, and I hope you take this as a compliment, because even if you don't, it's my show. I think you are.
I love it. Own it.
I think you are
it
the
is yours.
You are the blonde Tina Fey.
Oh, bless your heart.
And by that,
I would probably vomit hearing that, but I don't care. I like it, and I'm going to tell people you said that.
And the reason is because you are, frankly, you're funnier, and I love Tina, but you're funnier. But you also, you're working your fanny off, and a fine fanny it is. You're working your fanny off to get all of these projects flying all at the same time, going as fast as you possibly can, and doing great stuff. I mean, like I said, I'm a big. I sound like a stalker. I'm going to step back here.
No, you know what? I'm going to let you keep going. I'm enjoying it. I'm just patting myself on the back.
Yeah, you go ahead because I can't.
Wendy, you earned it.
Yeah, you go ahead because I can't reach it from here.
I'm keeping busy, yeah.
Wendy, you're doing so much, obviously. Love the Goldbergs, Bridesmaid, classic, one of my favorite films ever. But I love your improv work, too. Do you have more plans to do more of that?
You know, it's funny. You end up improving a lot on movies now. That's kind of the new trend is, you know, you do everything scripted, and then if there's time, they'll let you riff for a while. So I love doing that. I don't anticipate being able to do that on my next movie that I start next week. It's a kind of a heavy thing called Felt with Liam Neeson. And
have you ever worked with Liam Neeson before?
Watergate scandal. What's that?
Have you ever worked with Liam Neeson before?
No, I never have. I'm nervous.
Yeah.
Time for Dean Richards. Sponsored by,
The Wintrust Community Banks, folks. Take care of the entire hour. And here's Dean. Hi, buddy.
Good morning.
How are you today?
I'm still on cloud nine after last night.
Hanging out with who?
Television legend Norman Lear.
Did you pitch him a show? Because nobody ever does that.
Nobody ever asks him about that. I was just standing around with him before and after the show, and a couple of people said, hey, I have a great idea for a show.
Mm-hmm.
Man's 93 years old. Let him rest a little bit.
Will you share a couple of stories with us after the traffic?
I certainly will, and some actual sound of Mr. Lear himself talking about some of his old shows. My favorite, a comparison between his most famous character, Archie Bunker, and a certain person who was running for president of the United States.
I can't imagine who you'd be speaking of, but you'll tell us in just a second. Hey, the finale, the series finale of Castle was last night, Mary Vandeveld.
Don't tell me.
Oh, God. Can't live in this
I'm
world.
I'm too behind. I'm sorry.
Can't live in this world.
I'm sorry. No. I had to watch Dancing with the Stars.
All right. I will tell you this. It's better than you would expect it would be. Because it was a disappointing season that led to the end of the show because Nathan Fillion and Stana Katic apparently hate each other and were fighting, and that's why they canceled the show.
Didn't they all die? Everybody on the show?
Andrea.
No.
Okay.
I thought that may be the case.
Did anybody die? Can you
do you
want
to know or do you not want to know?
I don't want to know who, but did anyone die?
Did any of the main characters die?
Yes.
You really want to know?
No.
All right, then. Here's Mary with the traffic at 8:16, and then we'll come back with Dean.
You just answered my question.
No, I didn't, actually.
You kind of did, I think. All right.
Did any of the main characters on the show die?
I know I am right now.
You and me both. I can tell. I'm looking at Steve's face. I think they did. Oh, no.
Now you go.
I got to go. Okay.
You can travel Chicago. You'll be calling his name. Dean Richards.
That's him. 8:21 now. Before we get to Norman Lear, what's up with Sinead O'Connor?
Everything seems to have calmed down.
Everything's coming up baldy.
Wait a minute.
Oh, everything's coming up roses.
Our theme song.
Everything's coming up baldy.
She is resting in an Evanston hospital this morning after she went missing early yesterday morning. Police in Wilmette conducted a search. They found her on a tip at a hotel in Morton Grove. She is, we don't really know what happened, what precipitated the whole thing.
This all came from a social media post where something in relation to her, the world would be better without her, or maybe she should just leave or something like that, right? There was reason to believe she might be in the mindset of hurting herself.
She had I don't know if there was an actual attempt of suicide, but a very angry suicide note was left several months ago, so people are very concerned. She's got a boyfriend who lives in Wilmette, and that's why she was in the area. But what precipitated her leaving that place of residence in Wilmette, going to the hotel, what was going to happen at the hotel, nobody is commenting on any of that. Just that she is she's safe, she's in a hospital right now. On social media, I mean, she is a very polarizing person. She's always been very controversial, and some really nasty things being said on social media.
Oh, yeah, because the gutless cowards who go on social media and hide behind a screen name, you know, good for you. I don't know how you have any mirrors in your home.
And in a general sense, but this is somebody who is dealing with a very serious disease of depression and mental illness, and, you know, I'm not especially a fan of her music. That's beside the point. She's a human being also who has a disease, and I would hope that people would have a little more compassion. If it was somebody in their family or themselves, I would think that they also would, you know, want that same kind of courtesy.
There, but for the grace of God go I. I never knew what it meant, and when I found out, I went, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Kim Kardashian is in the news this morning. She barely gets any press. I'm so glad to see a breakout story for her.
This story could not be any more different from the Sinead O'Connor story.
Right.
We're happy for the Kim Kardashian. She won an award last night, the 20th Annual Webby Awards. These are awards given out for internet culture, the funniest and most viral moments on the web. And she won the first ever Break the Internet Award. The award that was, you know, that phrase was created for
Was this for the wine glass on her butt thing?
Correct. Now, at the Webby Awards, Steve, and this should be a rule at all award shows from now on, all acceptance speeches must be no more than 5 words long.
Are you serious? That's a rule?
That's the rule at the Webby Awards.
Well, that's great. I love that.
I'm a huge advocate of that for all award shows. Kim Kardashian's acceptance speech yesterday was, "Nude selfies until I die."
Oh, God. Why does she have to threaten us? You know, what did we do?
Here's a visual statement you'll never be able to unhear.
Unbelievable. Charlie Sheen's got a problem. Oh. I know. We have pick one for today.
Let's spin the wheel of Charlie Sheen problems. Turns out that he is in trouble with his credit card company. Seems like he's accrued somewhere in the neighborhood of $300,000 in credit card debt. With American
Express. How could he not be able to pay his bills? He was the highest paid guy on TV for 9 years.
He's aside from that, still has to be getting a bazillion dollars in
residuals checks.
Two and a half men still running everywhere. And the show, the anger management show, did fairly well. So I don't know. I don't know. You know, you start going crazy with your credit card. And apparently a sizable amount of this are late charges. So, you know, you start accruing debt at, between 20 and 30%. Adds up.
$300,000 and 298 of its late charges.
That's possible. Have you ever fallen behind a month in your credit card?
Your next statement is $298,000.
Adds up pretty quickly. Talking about final shows, by the way, I just wanted to mention, I haven't seen it, so I can't really give you any details, but worth mentioning, too, that the Mike and Molly finale was last night on CBS.
I didn't know that.
And I hear very sweet and very positive and affirming, and just like what you were saying on Castle, apparently everybody got killed.
There was a gun battle? A Mike and Molly gun battle?
Apparently. Yeah. Apparently everyone's dead.
Hugh Hefner is 127 now, and what a life he's led. But now how he's been tied into this Cosby lawsuit?
The person who filed the lawsuit about a year ago against Bill Cosby, claiming that Cosby spiked her drink and then sexually abused her, has not and dropped that case in February, has filed a new lawsuit now naming Hugh Hefner, saying that he knew about Cosby's acting upon young women and introduced her to Bill Cosby at a party in 2008. So she's saying that Hugh Hefner is also liable for what she alleges happened at that party.
Well, she may have a case, right?
Yeah. No word from Hefner on the whole thing.
Let's talk about old guys we like. Norman Lear sat down with you last night. Where was this?
This was at the Music Box Theater on North Southport. They showed a documentary that is going to be released in July that's about not only Norman's career and the amazing shows that he's created. Do you know that he had seven of the top 10 shows in America?
Never been done before.
At one time. All in the Family, Good Times.
Maude.
The Jeffersons, Maude. Mary Hartman, Sanford and Son. The list goes on and on of amazing shows and characters that he and his staff have created. So has lived an amazing life. A father who was arrested. That was the last time that he saw his father was when he was 9 years old. A father that he said he kind of based Archie Bunker on. Was very much that character. A very difficult life that he's led, aside from all of his professional success. Great film, but such a nice guy. He's 93 years old. He is completely sharp, completely witty, completely articulate. And after the screening of the movie, sat down with Norman and the two directors of this documentary on the stage at the Music Box. And we talked about a bunch of things. One of the things, I wanted him to reflect a little bit on creating, if he even knew what monumental characters he was creating with all of these shows.
Mine was a giant collaboration. I didn't do any of this alone. You know, there were lots of writers and producers and directors, and God, the talent. I mean, I think you had a little bit in here talking about when Carol O'Connor came in and read the script. He read a page, and I knew that was, if he would accept the role, that was Archie Bunker. But the miracle of the chemistry between Archie and Edith and Michael and Gloria and Archie, you know, nobody's responsible for that but the face, the heavens, whatever you believe in.
Yeah, there's some really cool behind-the-scenes footage in rehearsal halls.
How about how modest he is?
Well, he, you know, just speaks to the kind of guy that he is. Could not be a more
Tell me the Trump
delightful
story.
Man. Well, I wanted to, you know, we talked about all the things from in the past, but I was curious about some things going on today. So I pointed out to him, when I watch All in the Family and I hear Archie Bunker, ranting and raving, and then you switch over to see it. The rants are not that different from Donald Trump. So we talked about that a little bit, but we also talked about a project that he is 93 years old, a television show that he is currently producing now.
Divided. We just did a
the first episode of a Latino version of One Day at a Time, a show I did years ago. This is a Cuban-American family. Rita Moreno is the... We're doing three generations of Latino women. They're Cuban-American, and the first show we did last week, it came up. It was terrific.
When I watch Archie Bunker, and I hear him spewing and ranting and all the things that we know Archie for, and then I switch over to CNN for a minute, and I see Donald Trump ranting, and they're almost the same guy.
I think, and I have said that I think of Donald Trump as the middle finger of the American right hand.
Wow.
How about that?
Wow.
How about that?
Guy can still write on the fly, can't he?
How about that? I mean, you know, it's 93 years old. This guy was on Richard Nixon's enemies list
back in the
70s. He battled Jerry Falwell and the Moral Majority, creating organizations for the free expression of your political beliefs. And he's still very, very into politics, obviously. But he's not afraid. He's like Donald Trump, not afraid to be politically incorrect and say what's on his mind.
Yeah, and who would have pitched a show like Maude and thought it would have clicked the way it went?
Right. Wow. You know, amazing.
Lady Godiva was a freedom writer. She didn't care if the whole world looked. You remember that song?
Yeah. He talks about in this movie. They talk about how the television show The Jeffersons was a response to criticism they got for the show Good Times. That was set in Cabrini Green here in Chicago.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The criticism was, why can't you show a successful black family?
Exactly right. And he said that the Jeffersons were mainly created because he felt that there was some validity in that criticism.
How about that?
And showed George and Wheezy moving on up.
Well, I'm happy you had a chance to do that because he's not going to be around forever, but I think he'll outlive you and I.
It was awesome. We had a great Q&A last night. People in the audience had some great questions. I'm going to do a sit-down, quiet one-on-one with him today. And I'm not sure exactly when we're going to play it on the radio, but we've got much more on this. Truly one of the most defining people in creating what television is today, and that includes Netflix and everything that you're seeing today. Much of that came from the vision that Norman Lear and all of his people had 40 years ago.
By the way, make a quick phone call when we let you go here, because an 815 texter says you need to hook your mother up with Norman Lear.
They're the same age.
That's what I'm saying.
They're the same age, except you know what else?
And Norman Lear loves Greek yogurt.
Very true. Who doesn't, really? But check this out. Norman Lear got remarried to a woman who is about 25 years younger than him and has had twins at around age 80. So
hold on a second. I don't think this is working. She had twins at 80. What are you talking about?
No. She was 25 years younger than Norman Lear, who was 80.
He was 80
when she had the twins.
When she had the twins, yeah.
But that would have made her 55.
You know, miracles, Steve. Happening all the time.
The hell, why don't you pitch him that show? A 55-year-old mother of twins. Think, man. All right, buddy, thank you. We'll take a break. Come back. It's your big story next on 720 WGN. All right, so we have found somebody in line at O'Hare.
Oh, how long has this person been waiting in line?
We're going to talk to him on the phone in just a second. More on Senator Durbin. Podcast up. Durbin podcast up at WGNradio.com or the WGN Radio app. It's all up there. We've got this guy standing by online. I don't want to make him wait, so I believe I'm right. It's at O'Hare. Let's go there now as people continue to wait in line as long as 3 hours just to take a simple flight. You know, weddings are being missed. Funerals are being missed. Forget about business trips. You know, there's family stuff.
Yeah, and the plane doesn't wait. They're not going to say, oh, so-and-so.
No, they're going to leave on time.
No, absolutely.
So you got planes flying with a third of the people on them because people can't get processed. It's ridiculous. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yeah, good morning. It's nice to be on your radio show.
Well, it's flying internationally, or?
Well, I was. I'm from Midsummer Mass right outside of Birmingham. My name's Jeremy Bradford.
Sammy Bradford, I believe, is what you said.
No, that's not what I said, but if you believe it, that's okay.
Well, what actually is your name, sir?
Jeremy Bradford.
Oh, Jeremy Bradford.
Yeah.
And Jeremy, where are you flying to?
Well, I'm flying from O'Hare. I've been here about 3 hours, and I'm trying to get Midway.
So you're flying from O'Hare to Midway?
Yeah, it's supposed to be like a connecting flight. Partly this is my own fault. I had like 4 ounces of shampoo. You're only allowed 3, and I guess you got to go back to the beginning of the line, whatever.
Right.
And then one of the dogs, I don't know, I was playing fetch with it, and it just went down the hallway really far.
No, you can't play fetch with the bomb-sniffing dogs. That's a bad idea.
Yeah, well, of course, nobody told me that, did they?
Well, no, and you're not from here. All right, so in addition to what you've already told us, what are you doing to kill time in line?
Well, a couple of things. I learned, how about this, Actoria Incumbit Probatio. I learned how to speak Latin.
He did not know that. He actually has learned Latin while he's waiting in line to take his flight.
I believe that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Victoria Incumbit Probatio.
How are the other people around you?
That's not bad. This one guy behind me, he just found this out. You people might find this interesting. 1,632 licks to get to the bottom of the Tootsie Roll in the Tootsie Pop.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's how long it took him.
Well, how about that?
They said we'd never find that out, but that's a lie.
I'm being told, and you can confirm or deny, because this is at O'Hare, and maybe it's not in your line, but there is a couple in line at O'Hare who were married and conceived and had a baby, all trying to get out of town. Is that true?
That is true, and the second child's already going through college.
So, all right, so yeah, you're in very good mood. You're in good spirits about this. I respect that.
Yeah, we just find different games to play. We played the Costco game. I don't know if you know what that is.
I don't.
Costco game is, you know, did you buy it at Costco or is it supplies for a third world country?
Okay. All right, yeah, because there's a lot of stuff. Yeah, I get it. I totally get it.
It's tons.
All right, and you're flying again from O'Hare to Midway. Where will you go after Midway?
I just want to see the sights of the South Side.
All right, so you're flying from O'Hare to Midway, and you're just going to go up and down Cicero Avenue?
Yeah, pretty much. I need a soccer ball, and I figured where else to go.
It's, I'm sorry, I forgot your name. Jeremy. It's Jeremy.
Live. Jeremy Bretford.
Jeremy
Bretford.
Right. Live at O'Hare. Anything else, Jeremy?
No, you called me. I just want to let you know what I'm doing.
I want to know if he slept on one of those cots, if they're comfortable or not.
Yeah, have you slept at the airport?
Oh, yeah, I slept on the airport, and the woman's name was Catherine or Katie or something. Just a big woman. Very comfortable.
No, that's not what you want. If there's a large person, that's not a couch. It's Jeremy, what, Bretford? Bretford?
Bretford, yeah.
Yeah, Bretford. Bretford, yeah. Live from O'Hare. Flying from O'Hare to Midway. It's 8:51. We're back after this at 720 WGN.
Let's just imagine I'm on a debate stage with Donald Trump. Now, personally, I am really looking forward to it. And so let's suppose, here's the question. So what is your plan to create jobs? His answer is, I'm going to create them. They're going to be great. I know how to do it, but I'm not telling you what it is I'm going to do.
Hillary Clinton yesterday doing her Donald Trump impression. She's got the right words. She needs a little work, though. A little more arrogance. Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail yesterday. Meanwhile, on Fox, Meghan McCain is all over Hillary Clinton. You know, the ladies, can't we all just get along? Can't we all just get along? Meghan McCain jumping all over Hillary Clinton yesterday on Fox. Here it is.
Donald Trump has to step up and answer a lot of questions, and he has to start being a leader. And he has said he wants to unite this party. That means uniting people like me, people that still have hesitations. I told you, a tuna sandwich over Hillary Clinton. I prefer anything and anyone
There's
over
no
Hillary Clinton.
There's no way a tuna sandwich could be. There's no way. Because like it would be under attack. Do something. What are you just sitting there?
Because I think Hillary Clinton is truly evil, and she's truly a liar, and she's been responsible, in my opinion, she's for getting people evil. Killed. She's Darth Vader. It's fine. She's Darth Vader. I can't trust her in any way.
You know, I know she's a grown woman now, but you would think because she is so polarizing that her dad, Senator John McCain, would go, you know, I pick Sarah Palin. Haven't I been hurt enough? Can you just shut up? You're not helping. You're not helping.
Megyn Kelly, right?
No, that's Meghan McCain.
Oh, that's Meghan McCain.
Meghan McCain. You want a little Meghan Kelly? I can get you that in a second. First, Roxanne Brewer Lane was a model in the 90s who was quoted, or cited, I should say, in the New York Times piece on Trump's relationship to women. More of the women in politics on a Monday for your Tuesday dining and dancing pleasure. Here's that.
I was promised so many times by them and to my manager and myself just over and over again that it was a positive article that I was giving them, and that's how it was going to be depicted, that it was not a hit piece, that it was just each person's rendition of their experiences with Donald Trump, and mine
like they spun
was
your experience. Yeah, as you say, my in fact, you feel like was, they spun it into a negative.
They absolutely did. I don't have a negative story to give about Donald Trump because I don't have a negative, account of anything. Well, we had a great relationship. I just really felt like that they misled me into that the entire time into that article, and that it was almost a trap.
If you read the article, which I have, and I would recommend people do as well, as Chuck Todd said on the show earlier this morning, there's no big surprises there if you pay attention to this stuff and how Trump has treated women. What isn't stated by Roxanne Brewer Lane there is she dated Trump. She didn't just work for him. She dated him. And I don't know what the state of the relationship is now. But Trump wanted to make sure that everybody knew that Roxanne Brewer Lane was defending him. He apparently called the CNN control room. Listen.
Kind of revealing a behind the scenes about how Trump tries to change or control media coverage of him. Only a few minutes after that interview on Fox this morning, this woman was interviewed on Fox in the 7 a.m. hour. Trump called into CNN's New Day control room. He wasn't going to go on air. In fact, we asked if he would go on air. The producers were asking him, and he said he wouldn't go on air. But he wanted to make sure the producers of New Day had seen the interview on Fox on the rival network so they could cover the interview.
He himself. Now, that's right. Trump not himself, having his publicist
try to imagine
or anybody
what that's
else.
Like, right? When you're a producer sitting in the control room and going through a normal interview, and then Donald Trump is on the phone. I'm pretty sure past presidential candidates have not been calling into television network control rooms trying to influence coverage.
And lastly, give me the Megyn Kelly cut too. Megyn Kelly, because this is a nice wrap up to all of this, speaking on the gender issue in politics. Sure, Trump may be a creep with women, but what about Hillary with women? Is she taking care of business on that end? Here's Megyn Kelly.
The Times, that's our job to dig into these candidates. But I think they ought to do the same to her because Trump's allegations about Hillary's past with women mm-hmm. and the role she played in trying to diminish the ones who claimed that they had had affairs or been attacked by Bill Clinton is also relevant. If we're going to go back 25 years on him and figure out what he did at the time, then it's fair game for her, too, especially because they're both making gender an issue.
I don't entirely understand where she's going with that.
I don't either. That was the quote that I was waiting for you to play. This is the same woman who Trump accused of having blood coming out of
her wherever.
All of her, yeah, orifices or whatever he said.
Yeah, well, you said her wherever.
Her wherever.
I don't think he knows what an orifice is. Warren Buffett was busy yesterday. He bought $1 billion. A billion. B-I-L-L-I-O-N. $1 billion of Apple stock. $1 billion. Berkshire Hathaway is his company. In a vote of confidence for Apple, Berkshire Hathaway disclosed a 9.8 million share stake in the company taken out of the first quarter of this year. Stake was worth $1.07 billion at the end of the first quarter.
What did he pay per share, does it say?
$92.50.
Wow.
Actually, that may have been the closing price, but something around $90 a share.
I would love to just buy a share.
Here's the weird thing. He did it all on his Scott trade account. Mm-hmm. That's not
really
because it's only $7 a trade.
And then his phone blew up.
I mean, come on. That's how you save yourself some dough. Congratulations to Andrew Shaw. Andrew Shaw won the Blackhawk Fans Unsung Hero Award, as you may have seen in the Tribune. And Homer Simpson has picked Chicago deep dish pizza over New York pizza. Homer Simpson, who loves his donuts. In a improvised episode on Sunday, had Homer Simpson take viewer questions for the first time in 27 seasons for the East and West Coast airings. And to prove he was live, he lobbed a zinger and said Drake was terrible on Saturday Night Live the night before.
Stupid Saturday Night Live.
Somehow the only food question focused on pizza. He said, I prefer Chicago deep dish pizza because I like Italian better than Chinese.
Oh, that's good.
And of course, the voice is Dan Castellaneta, and Dan's a Chicago guy. Did you ever work with Dan, John DeCoste?
Actually, I did.
He's a good guy.
Wonderful guy.
Yeah. And it's a shame that hasn't worked out for him as Homer Simpson.
No, he got locked into one thing, and that was it.
Do you guys remember that Homer Simpson was originally going to be the show, and then that Bart Simpson thing started to work pretty well?
Yeah, that's like Hazel.
So, a couple other things. The best chocolate chip cookie in all 50 states list is out. These are the kind of things that flood my inbox, and I think you know what I'm talking about. The best chocolate. Who loves a chocolate chip cookie?
Oh, I do.
Oh, yeah. Please.
Full House has to be number one.
Chocolate chip.
Who do you think the best one is?
Toll House.
Kathy Reeb.
Who?
What?
Larry Reeb's wife, Kathy Reeb.
She makes the best chocolate chip cookies?
Once a year I get them. They're unbelievable.
Isn't Larry Reeb doing a show with us?
He is.
We haven't announced it yet, have we?
No. So we can't really talk about it. Okay. But we can talk about his cookies.
Is she making cookies for it?
Yes.
Excellent.
All right. Do you know the Cookie Bar?
The Cookie Bar? Where's that?
Cookie Bar is an entirely gluten-free bakery. Their classic chocolate chip cookies have crispy edges, chewy insides, and the overall deliciousness of a cookie made with wheat, the Belgian chocolate, grade AA butter, and Mexican vanilla extract made in-house. Put the cookie over the top. For a giant version of their chocolate chip cookie, you can order the Cookie Bar's giant cookie pizza with chocolate chip crust.
Oh, my God.
But it has no gluten.
I was going to say, it's a gluten-free cookie?
Well, it's probably pretty good.
Gluten? There's no way it's good. You need that gluten.
Yeah, you've got to have the gluten.
Well, let's send, is Bennett Cumberbatch still here? Let's send Bennett over to the Cookie Bar and get us a cookie.
I just want to tell you that I make the best chocolate chip cookies.
Well, really? Because we haven't seen them, have we?
Yeah,
you've been working here a month.
Hey, I'm looking out for your guys' waistlines.
Yeah, okay. Well, how about you forget about that and bring us some cookies?
Yeah, we don't care.
That banana bread you made yesterday was awesome. Thank you, Mary.
It was very good.
If you bring in cookies, I will go ahead and have one.
I will, too.
Yeah,
me too.
They're the best.
See, not to say mine are good, too.
I'll even have one.
Oh, good.
There
Dave.
You go.
Like it, Dave, because they're thin. So
put some kale in it.
No, don't put kale in it, Mary. But bring those in.
Kale. I'll bring them.
And where is the Cookie Bar? Did you look it up?
I'm looking it up now. Location and hours. Hold on. Cookie Bar.
Yeah.
We have one right here?
We do have one in Chicago. Hold on. 1746 West Wilson.
I don't know where that is.
Looking at me.
I know.
It's like Wilson and...
Doesn't help.
Bennett can ride his bike there.
Ashland.
Bennett rides his bike everywhere.
So it's over on the edge of Lincoln Park.
Yeah, it's left. Maybe more like Sheridan Park. Kind of by the Riviera Theater.
The best chocolate chip cookie in Alaska? The Great Harvest Bread Company. Isn't that a chain?
Yeah. Yes. Isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of sad in a way, isn't it? All right, these are the important stories I'm covering. Let's go to you, John. YouTube is, I don't know if you're familiar with YouTube, you guys, but YouTube is where anyone can put up videos and get incredibly famous. We've seen Dancing with the Stars contestants come off this. We've seen people become multimillionaires.
You have to have a lot of talent, though, to be on YouTube.
Right.
And without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. So what we wanted, when we say we, I mean me, what we want is for John to be super famous. So famous that he no longer does the show. So we started this YouTube channel, which is called Today in DeCoste.
Correct.
And how do we spell DeCoste?
DACOSSE.
And Today in DeCoste now features how many videos?
I think we're up to 32 now. We just added one today.
32 videos.
That's huge.
I know. And we've 32. Got more on the way.
Any you want to highlight in particular?
The Today one was a lot of fun. It's just called Hot Coffee.
Hot coffee.
Yeah.
Hot coffee. That's today's new video. How do we access it again?
You can go to YouTube.
Yes.
Just go right to Today in DeCoste, type that in, and it pops up.
And what we're looking here for is for you to subscribe, for you to go ahead and be a part of the world of John DeCoste. What sort of insane foolishness goes on every day in John's life? See it all in video form.
And you can binge all 32 episodes in less than 20 minutes.
That's fantastic. What a time saver you are.
Yeah. We're going to be on Netflix soon.
Today in DeCoste. Yeah. I just got a call from Netflix. I'm being told you're not going to be on Netflix.
Okay.
But you know how great that is, though, to have, what do you have, 32 videos?
Yeah.
Chris Hemsworth, you know, not to compare, only has made 20 movies. So, I mean, look at the cost is already.
Yeah.
They don't know how to work, man.
You're a leader. Hey, Senator Durbin, who was on earlier this morning, is going to be on again in about 7 minutes. He's already had a meeting on TSA, And, oh, I'm sorry, 9:36, less than 20 minutes away. Senator Durbin is back with an update on TSA news that he's making since he was on at 7:30.
Excellent.
Yeah. Wow.
We'll get the update.
All right. So you texters, stand by for your hate texts. Number to text in is 312-981-7200. That's for phone calls as well. The Steve Cochran Show continues next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show.
There's not enough lanes open right now, obviously, if there's people back up to almost the doors.
We're working with Congress to get TSA more funding.
We have to stay in the long line. I already be in the line for 1 hour.
Congress last week approved a reprogramming of $34 million for more overtime and to expedite the hiring of more TSOs.
I waited in line for about, I don't know, an hour and 45 minutes before I got through and I ended up missing my flight.
And with OMB, we are evaluating whether more will be necessary.
I'm as mad as hell and I'm not going to take this anymore.
Joe Schwederman, professor at DePaul, author on all things transportation related and an expert on the same. He can even talk zoning at a party if you want to invite him. And Joe joins us now. Hey, Joe, how are you, man?
Doing just fine.
Thanks for doing this. And listen, you know this stuff inside out and backwards. Are you surprised we've gotten into this TSA mess?
Well, everybody's surprised at the length of these lines. And, you know, I was always saying, you know, 20, 30 minutes really pushes people's patience. You're talking hour, hour and a half. Some reports of 2 hours. The system just can't function with that kind of uncertainty for passengers.
Right, and planes are going to be missed, and lives are going to be turned upside down for a period of time, and you're going to get violent. And this is not drama. You're going to get violence breaking out at the airport. Come on.
Yeah, when lines get this long, the problem is so many people are at risk of missing flights that people have to ask for special favors to get through the front of the line, and that creates sort of a chaos situation, you know, where people free ride, people lie, that sort of thing. And, you know, I worked in the airline business for a while, and I just, you know, in the old days, you miss a flight, you could, you know, stand by for the next one. Now you could wait days for a flight.
Right.
You know, the stress level can be just off the chart.
Joe, what's the short-term solution for this? I know they say several hundred more TSA agents are going to be coming to O'Hare and Midway and airports all across the country this month, hundreds more by the end of the summer, but what can be done now?
Yeah, I think the TSA has really taken it on the chin here, is that they don't have a plan B for these kind of situations to fly people in and so forth. But in the very short run, what we're talking about is more overtime, more people who have served kind of supervisory roles to be out there working the gates. Of course, there's a real effort to the big problem they're having, it seems, is the entire line stops to recheck bags. So they're really working to try to get people not to have, you know, 4 ounces of liquid in it. But the whole problem, the way the TSA set up was, you know, requires a special request to move people around between locations. And businesses just can't function in that kind of environment where it takes weeks to get people around. So things are, heads may roll for this, the TSA, so things are finally getting done.
There's a certain amount that we can do as passengers, but that is on a voluntary basis. What can the airlines themselves do to help their problem because they're flying planes that aren't full?
Yeah, well, the airlines, you know, 20 or so airports have been authorized to experiment with private screeners, and it seems to be working really well. So we're going to see a flood of airports apply for this special program. In the real short term, the airlines are trying to work with the TSA. The big innovation that can be done quickly is if you have special conveyors installed where if a bag detects, something's detected in a bag, you don't stop the whole line, but you put it on a secondary a screening and conveyor, and there's some talk the airlines may be willing to upfront some money to try to get that stuff put in quick before Congress's money arrives. You know, simply because, especially on short distance flights, you know, Chicago, St. Louis, Detroit, and others, ticketing has to be sinking here really fast because of this hassle factor.
Last question. Why can't we have lines based on when your plane flies with the airlines paying for the people to check your boarding pass?
Well, you know, it's there is going to be a flood of applications for pre-check, and I'm one of them. You know, I fly pretty regularly, and it's, you know, we think to get pre-check, you don't even have an office at Midway, for example. You have to go elsewhere. So they will be experimenting with things, and you certainly could envision a case where, you know, half the U.S. population in a couple of years has pre-check. But the TSA way overestimated the number of people who are going to do that. They expected, you know, 25 million, and it's only about 7. So they have miscalculated in a big way.
I appreciate your expertise, Joe. We will bother you again on this. And if people want to follow you or get everything related to Joe Schwederman, how do we do that?
Well, I'll just go to our academic center. It's called the Chadick Institute, Chaddick Institute, and we got a lot of good stuff on there.
Thank you, Joe. Great. I appreciate it. 9:29, Senator Durbin again updates his previous appearance on the show from 2 hours ago with news out of Washington on this TSA mess. At 9:29, the big story is next on 720 WGN.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own.
You are listening to station WGN.
You remember that genius move I made when the Olympic bidding was going on?
Which one? You said we would get it?
I guaranteed we would get it. And I said, if we don't get the Olympics, I will synchronize swim in a kiddie pool on Michigan Avenue.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you never did that.
Oh, yeah, I did. Yeah, okay. I did.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, that video exists. Yeah, of me with water wings in a kiddie pool out in front of this studio on Michigan Avenue.
I remember. Thought that was just a Friday.
Well, we went with kiddie pool because I'm not a strong swimmer. So, but yeah. Oh, yeah, I did it. Yeah.
Googling. I'm YouTubing that right now.
Yeah, you know my lifeguard was Patty Vasquez.
Oh.
Patty Vasquez, who was a lifeguard at North Avenue Beach.
Did you really need a lifeguard?
I could have drowned.
Oh, yeah.
4 inches of water. But it was a good look. It was a sexy, sexy look for me. So. And so I'm bitter about the Rio Olympics on numerous levels.
I'm Googling Steve Cochran kiddie pool.
No, it exists. Don't look at it.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, it exists.
This is fantastic.
9:39. Senator Durbin was good enough to join us this morning in the midst of a very busy morning and is aggravated by this TSA thing as you are and probably flies more than both of us combined. Rejoins us now from Washington. You have an update, sir.
Steve, I do. I talked to Jay Johnson. He's the head of the Department of Homeland Security, which oversees the TSA agencies. Mm-hmm. And several things. First, they've sent a management team out to O'Hare this morning to see if there are any ways they can use current resources in a more efficient way so people don't have to wait in line so long. He's also personally authorized an increase. It's a modest, modest increase in the number of screeners who will be coming out to O'Hare in the near future. And one thing that Ginger Evans, the Commissioner of Aviation, asked yesterday, we have 4 dogs, God bless them, at the airport, which is not nearly enough. They're going to double that, send another 4 dogs out. And what it means is, as those dogs can walk the line, sniff the luggage, and not detect any bombs, those people in that line can then be pushed into the TSA pre-check line, which is moving much more quickly than the regular lines. He tells me that the number of people applying for TSA pre-check has gone up threefold. People are finally realizing this is something they should have done a long time ago, and I encourage your listeners to think about that if they're regular travelers. It costs $85, but it can spare you one miserable experience at the airport and possibly missing a flight that's important to you. The last thing he said, I talked to him about baggage fees, and I really think that is part of the problem. He agreed. People, to avoid baggage fees, drag everything on board they could possibly yep. drag on. And what they're finding is, I mean, we can make arguments about how that is a problem. Where they're finding firearms, for example, loaded firearms, are largely in these bags that people are dragging on. Once that happens, the whole system grinds to a halt
sure.
as they, you know, find the firearm and such. So the airlines can help themselves through the summer travel season by suspending the baggage fees, and we can help ourselves by checking more bags when we absolutely positively don't have to run out of the airport at the other end of it. So we're going to keep on this, but those are the reports I got this morning.
That's an impressive development. I would ask you this, because you know this end of the business better than I do. Competitively, if one airline does something, it seems all the other airlines have to follow. So all we really need is one of the majors, and there's only 3 or 4 majors left to say they'll do it, and everybody, I would think, would fall in line.
Well, and of course, from Southwest Airlines' viewpoint, and they're kind of...
Yeah, they go, what's in it for me? We already do it.
You know, they're a renegade in the industry. They can go their own way, on their own websites and so forth, but they've kind of made that their brand, that we're going to make it cheaper and less of a hassle for you to travel. And I tend to agree with you. If one of the majors decides, that's it, we're going to help out the problem at the airport, come on and check your bag, and we're not going to charge you for it.
And it would be great PR.
Yeah, and it cost them some money, but let me tell you, empty seats and frustrated customers are costing them money too. So it, I think it'd be better through the travel season, which apparently is a good one, that they do something like this.
Thanks. I know you're really busy. I appreciate the call back and the update.
Happy to help.
There you go. That's Senator Durbin in Washington. All right, so let's review.
All right, let's review. Management team is on its way to O'Hare right now to assess all of the problems that we've been having specifically over the past week with these three-hour-plus wait times.
And they're going to eyeball the problem, not just take everybody's word for it or not just watch YouTube videos.
Absolutely. Okay. They're going to increase the number of screeners.
So we're borrowing resources from other airports, which makes total sense because our friend George Bliss sent us a picture this morning of the TSA line at Rockford, which had exactly zero people waiting.
Right.
So why wouldn't we, find a couple of hotel rooms for people from Rockford, Milwaukee, whatever, and get them into Chicago?
Gary, yeah, wherever they are, bring them here. That's what they're going to do temporarily. They're going to have the dogs walk the lines now, those bomb-sniffing dogs that they're looking for explosives or traces of residue.
And we're going to borrow four other dogs. Can you believe we have the same number of bomb-sniffing dogs as Indianapolis?
Four dogs? O'Hare is the world's, well,
second busiest airport.
Yeah, it was the world's busiest airport. And then he also said apply for TSA pre-check. Which is interesting now, too, because listeners are bringing up great points. Now, won't this process take longer? Like when Dave Ennett had it, he convinced me to get it. Do you have
it? Oh, it'll absolutely take longer.
It took me maybe 15 minutes.
No, but there will be more people doing it now. So it will slow down pre-check, but it'll take stress off the regular line.
Exactly.
There'll be times we'll be able to fly through. But just the simple things, like you don't have to take your shoes off.
Right, and exactly. So those numbers, believe it or not, over the past month are up three times. So there's three times as many people applying for TSA pre-check, but it's so worth it.
You may have mentioned this, Ryan Burrow's pictures from the line for the application. Did you see those? That he tweeted some pictures.
I did not. Long lines?
Long lines for the TSA pre-check application.
Right.
But you know there's a benefit to what you're doing waiting in line there for.
The amount of time
you're standing in line now is a waste.
And honestly, that process, at one point took 10-15 minutes, maybe 20 minutes. So now, even if it takes an hour, that's not a big deal because, as you say, when you go to the airport, you won't have to wait for 3 hours.
You know, 1.2 million flights go out of O'Hare, and they have four dogs. I have two at home.
Can lend them.
Well, but you know what? Here's the thing. Those dogs are highly trained. And obviously, the dogs have to be highly trained. You don't want one suitcase full of steak to throw off a dog for a half an hour. So you got to have dogs that are highly trained and highly disciplined. So we need to not only increase the human power at these places, we got to increase the doggy power as well. Yeah. So wherever we're training these dogs, that has to be increased too. But the idea that whoever's running TSA didn't see this coming? Are you kidding me? I mean, it's like the 2007 housing crisis and security lines at O'Hare. How'd you miss this one?
Good comparison, yep.
All right, it's 9:45. Thanks again to Senator Durbin for calling back with that update. He got on it, man. 7:30 he says he's on it. 9:30 he's got an update. Dave's here with your information that you need to know, and then we're back with more show before Bill and Wendy at 10. I wrote the lyrics to this. And ooh. I wrote all that. Listen, a lot of people say they don't write them like that anymore. I say, yeah, you're right. It's 9:50, and Sandberg's here. Sandberg, the producer of the program. We call her Sandberg because her name is Mary, and Vandeveld called it. She was alive before you were, so she said she's Mary.
She called the naming rights.
Yes. Yeah.
She has squatter's rights on the name.
So you have to go with Sandberg, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm okay with Sandberg.
Or Mary number two.
Did we tell the story, though? Like I asked you, I said, I don't like calling you by your last name. Do you have a nickname or something? And you said, well, my father called me, what was it, Angel?
Angel. I think he told you that when he was in the studio, too, so you can't really call me that.
You're going, Angel, is Senator Durbin ready, Angel?
And sweetheart is the other thing they call me, so.
Get a little awkward around here.
Yeah.
All right, you got somebody to thank?
I do. Famous Dave's, yesterday, they brought us loads of barbecue because May is National Barbecue Month. And you should go to FamousDavesChicago.com because they're launching a series of parking lot events.
Oh, they're going to be in the parking lot?
Yeah.
You know, you say that to Dave, who grew up in the 70s, Dave. You probably took a lot of girls on a lot of parking trips, huh? Right? Up on top of Mount whatever, right? Am I right or am I right?
What, Sugarloaf Mountain?
That's the one.
That's the one?
That's the one.
It was called Sugarloaf Mountain?
There is a Sugarloaf Mountain, yes.
Oh, hey, Sugarloaf. Mm-hmm.
But the entire WGN staff was gorged themselves on barbecue yesterday.
It's funny, too, because you take the food upstairs, right, and you lay it out on, what would you call it, the kitchen, I suppose, and you put it on the counter, and it looks like a tornado hit it like 4 minutes later.
Ravaged.
People can't control themselves. Ashley, the digital sales manager, she was eating potato salad, and she's like, I don't even want to be eating this, but I can't not eat it if it's here. And she's
bet she appreciates you calling her out.
Oh, she looked cute. She had a ponytail and everything.
Yeah. It's nice of you to try to cover. All right, again, so it's in the parking lot, and what are we doing?
You're going to go to FamousDaveChicago.com to find out about their fun entertainment and things that are going to be going on in their parking lot events.
All right. And thank you for that, Famous Daves. At 9:53, John, when do we announce the next set of Steve Cochran Show stand-up comedy nights and other things?
We're actually going to wait on this a little bit. We do have...
legal problems?
Legal problems, yeah. But we have a special announcement at the end of this month, actually, so... concerning New Year's Eve, so a little tease.
Or is there going to be a New Year's Eve show?
Totally have gotten rid of New Year's Eve.
No.
Is there going to be two shows?
There's going to be.
Is it going to be in Chicago?
The greater Chicagoland area.
Come on, you can't leave us hanging now.
Yeah, we can.
That's the best part about this. It's going to be in Dave Ennett's backyard, and we're going to call it Ducks and Bunnies.
Yeah.
Let's go to Dave now for a wild animal update from your backyard. Dave, just a week or so ago, you had black panthers mating in your yard from Africa or something.
Or coyotes.
Oh, coyotes.
Coyotes.
And what is the latest on the coyote trouble?
Well, I haven't seen the coyote for a little over a week.
You sure it's just one?
Well, no,
you know,
I'm not
sure
about
coyotes. You snap the lights on, you see one, there's going to be a lot more.
There's going to be more. I ran into one when I was walking my dog a week ago Sunday in the morning.
What's your dog's name?
Ozzy.
And did Ozzy kill the coyote?
No. Ozzy was kind of oblivious, and the coyote sort of went the other way.
That's because Ozzy looked at you and went, dude, seriously, let's get out of here. That's a coyote. What's the matter with you?
That's what he calls me. Yeah. So
talked about that.
But since then, we've had some rabbits, a load of baby rabbits.
You're like Dr. Doolittle. You live on the end.
I'm not in the woods.
Yes, you are.
I'm in the burbs.
No, you are not in the burbs. You are in the woods. If any of you listeners have ever been to Dave's house, and you're all invited.
Thank you.
You basically go north of the city, and then you get to where it looks like, you know, you're sort of getting into a Vermont forest, and you turn left on a street that has no exit.
No.
And there's like three houses, and Dave's is the last one. And there's like a puff of smoke coming out of the wood stove chimney. And, you know, he's got Ma and Pa Walton out in front. I mean,
it's like a, what's that, zippity-doo-dah? Who's saying that zippity-doo-dah? And the birds are flying.
Oh, yeah, the little yellow animated birdie
song.
Song of the South.
Song of the South.
You know what's cool is that you learn so much from Dave. Like, I learned about a gaggle of geese, and then today I learned about a load of bunnies.
Yeah.
I did not know what they called a group of them.
I was trying to come up with
a load of bunnies.
But I'm concerned about you getting out of your house and walking to the car. I mean, how many days away are we from Dave going, or is a lion attack in my driveway?
No, I don't think it's that
bad. He leave his Acme catching stuff in the...
The coyote? No, he is not.
It's not Wiley E.
Yes.
No, it's a different coyote.
Oh, it's
coyote.
Not specific.
Yeah. No. Funny, because I learned a load of stuff today, too, from Steve. So it just comes full circle.
You know, I was talking to Jake about this, Mike Jacobson, audio genius.
Mm-hmm.
He brought up a great point. So what if you're attacked by a wildcat? Would that be a good thing or a bad thing?
Would you still say go cats?
Well, of course. Of course you would.
Go cats!
Yeah, it would be a good thing, wouldn't it? If you're attacked
by
a wildcat?
Yes, I think it would be a good thing.
How cool would it be if you got rabies?
Go cats!
That wouldn't be good.
Hey, it'd be a good story.
Dave, you can't live forever.
Hi, kids.
Speaking of getting older, the oldest living person in the world is now a 116-year-old woman from Italy. Her name is Emma Morano of Verbania, Italy. She's 116 years and 169 days old. She was born November 29th, 1899.
Wow.
Which means she was a teenager when the Titanic went down.
How weird is that?
Yeah, she was 8 when the Cubs won the World Series last.
She was 20 during World War I. I mean, come on. Is that nuts? The Beatles are on Ed Sullivan. She's retiring.
Well, I told this to you the other day. And Dave, how old is your dad?
He'll be 93 in December.
What if you told your dad he'd live for another 20 years?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think most people, once they've hit 90, are thinking in terms of
exactly
20 more.
Well, your dad's 90, right?
Yeah. 91.
Right.
91. I say it. I'd like to see your dad and Dave's dad in a cage match.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
The 116-year-old woman who would be a cougar to either one of your dads, by the
yes,
way.
Yes, that's right.
Says the secret to her long life is eating 3 eggs a day. 3 eggs a day.
Raw?
No, she cooks them. And you'll like this, the rest of it, being single so no one would nag her.
Wow.
Yeah. Does she drink wine, too? In Italy?
Oh, she's in Italy. It's the law. Yeah. Yeah, no, it's the law.
That's what does it.
It's 9:57. We're back with Bill and Wendy next on 720 WGN.